Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 5, Durvasa Muni's Life Spared. Text number 8. O Infallible One, when you were sent by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to enter among the soldiers of the Daityas and the Danavas, you stay on the battlefield and unendingly separate their arms, bellies, thighs, legs, and heads. O protector of the universe, you are engaged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his all-powerful weapon in killing the envious enemies for the benefit of our entire dynasty. Kindly favor this poor brahmana. This will certainly be a favor for all of us. If our family has given charity to the proper persons, we have performed ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices, we have properly carried out our occupational duties, and we have been guided by learned brahmanas, I wish in exchange that this brahmana be freed from the burning caused by the Sudarshana chakra. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is one without a second, who is the reservoir of all transcendental qualities, and who is the life and soul of all living entities, is pleased with us, we wish that this brahmana Durvasa Muni be freed from the pain of being burned. Shukadeva Goswami continued, when the king offered prayers to the Sudarshana Chakra and Lord Vishnu, because of his prayers, the Sudarshana Chakra became peaceful and stopped burning the brahmana known as Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni, the greatly powerful mystic, was indeed satisfied when freed from the fire of the Sudarshana Chakra. Thus he praised the qualities of Maharaj Amrisha and offered him the highest benedictions. Durvasa Muni said, my dear king, today I have experienced the greatness of the devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for although I have committed an offense, you have prayed for my good fortune. For those who have achieved the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of pure devotees, what is impossible to do and what is impossible to give up? What is impossible for the servants of the Lord? By the very hearing of his holy name, one is purified. O King, overlooking my offenses, you have saved my life. Thus I am very much obliged to you because you are so merciful. Expecting the return of Durvasa Muni, the king had not taken his food. Therefore, when the sage returned, the king fell at his lotus feet, pleasing him in all respects, and fed him sumptuously. Thus the king respectfully received Durvasa Muni, who after eating varieties of palatable food, was so satisfied that with great affection, he requested the king to eat also, saying, please take your meal. Text number 20. Pritosmi anugrihitosmi. Tava bhagavatasyavai. Darshana sparshana lapar. Atiye natma medasa. Pritaha, very much satisfied. Asmi, I am. Anugrihita, very much favored. Asmi, I am. Tava, your. Bhagavatasya, because of your being a pure devotee. Vai, indeed, darshana, by seeing you, sparshana, and touching your feet, alapai, by talking with you, atityena, by your hospitality, atma medasa, by my own intelligence. Translation of Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Durvasa Muni said, I am very pleased with you, my dear king. At first I thought of you as an ordinary human being and accepted your hospitality. But later I could understand by my own intelligence that you are the most exalted devotee of the Lord. Therefore, simply by seeing you, touching your feet, talking with you, I have been pleased and have become obliged to you. Purport. It is said, Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigeya Na Bhutaya. Even a very intelligent man cannot understand the activities of a pure devotee, of a pure Vaishnava. Therefore, because Durvasa Muni was a great mystic yogi, he first mistook Maharaj Ambarisha for an ordinary human being and wanted to punish him. Such is the mistaken observation of a Vaishnava. When Durvasa Muni was persecuted by the Sudarshana Chakra, however, his intelligence developed. Therefore, the word Atma Medasa is used to indicate that by his personal experience, he would understand how great a Vaishnava the king was. When Durvasa Muni was chased by the Sudarshana Chakra, he wanted to take shelter of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, and he was even able to go to the spiritual world, meet the personality of Godhead, and talk with him face to face. Yet he was unable to be rescued from the attack of the Sudarshana Chakra. Thus he could understand the influence of Vaishnava by personal experience. Durvasa Muni was certainly a great yogi and a very learned brahmana, but despite his being a real yogi, he was unable to understand the influence of a Vaishnava. Therefore it is said, Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigeha Na Bhutaya. Even the most learned person cannot understand the value of a Vaishnava. There is always a possibility for so-called jnanis and yogis to be mistaken when studying the character of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava can be understood by how much he is favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in terms of his inconceivable activities. So the translation again. Durvasa Muni said, I am very pleased with you, my dear king. At first I thought of you as an ordinary human being and accepted your hospitality. But later I could understand by my own intelligence that you are the most exalted devotee of the Lord. Therefore, simply by seeing you, touching your feet, talking with you, I have been pleased and have become obliged to you. Bhagavad Gita is our philosophy, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the examples of our philosophy. And in this example, it shows that not everyone sees things correctly. As a matter of fact, in the material world, everyone sees practically everything wrong, in the wrong way. For instance, generally we're not very concerned with the fact that we're an illusion. We actually, just like the worm, when it's in stool, it feels quite comfortable. It gets used to it. After all, the food is free, it's warm generally. He doesn't have to pay rent. His whole family can live there, and there's no problem. Generations can live there. So similarly, when we're in the material concept of life, we feel normal. We feel this is our normal situation. Therefore, Arjuna is asking Krishna, generally speaking, someone tries to do what they're supposed to do, but they fail to do it. So why is that? They know they're supposed to do something, but they do something else. So Krishna says, Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajaguna Samudvava, Mahashino Mahapatma Vididam Ihavarina. That is lust only, Arjuna, born of contact with the material mode of passion, which later turns into wrath. Dumena Vriyate Vanir, Itarda Shomalena Cha, Itobin Avrita Garvas, Tate Namam Avritam. Just like fire is covered by smoke, or the mirror is covered by dust, or the embryo is covered by the womb. So similarly, the living entity is covered by different degrees of lust. In other words, whether we like it or not, whether we perceive it or not, we're currently covered by Krishna's called illusory energy and the form of lust. So how do we know we're covered? Because first of all, we don't know who we are. Because in modern society, people are convinced that they have some material identity, that they're male or female, they're from a particular country, or they're rich or famous, or they're whatever. They have so many identities called upadis. But actually, these identities are constantly changing. Just like we may think, I'm a young person, but very shortly we're going to become an old person. And if I think I'm an old person, shortly we're probably going to become a young person again. So this old, young, whatever, is always changing. At what point do we suddenly become old? We know at the point we're going to become young again. But this is all due to identification with the body. But the fact is that the person who's identifying with the body is not changing at all. When we had a younger body, we thought that was me. And when we have this body, we think it's us. And when we get an older body, we'll still think it's us. But all the body is completely different. But we don't know who we are, nor do most people care to know who they are. All they're concerned about is how comfortable their body is. They're cleaning the cage of the bird very nicely, decorating the cage of the bird, but not giving any food to the bird. And yet they think they're very intelligent. The bird is going, beep, beep, please feed me. And everyone's saying, how nicely the bird is singing. Let's decorate its cage. Make it more pretty. Beep, beep, please feed me. I'm dying. No, no, it's all right. Don't worry about it. We're going to put some more flowers on your cage. So in the material world, we're walking around in an illusion. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Sattva nirupa sarvasha shadad bhavati bharata sharama yoyam purusha yoyat stratas evasaha. That according to one's situation, under the modes of material nature, one has a particular concept of life. So you ask anyone in the material world, everyone's going to give you a different answer about practically everything. Because everyone has a different conception of life. And everyone is acting according to their conception of life. And as they act according to their conception of life, they get another set of the modes of material nature to bewilder themselves with. And therefore they become convinced that this is reality now. This is the truth. Until they act according to that so-called truth, and then that becomes the truth. That becomes the truth for them, the modes of material nature that they acquire. Just like there was one forest where there was an elderly lion, the king of the forest. He was so old, he couldn't hunt very well, but in any case, he was surrounded by jackals. And whenever the king would get something, the jackals would be able to eat. But there was one bull, and the king of the jungle, the lion and the bull made an alliance that they wouldn't fight with each other. But as the course of time, as things went on, there was a drought in the kingdom, and therefore food became very scarce. So the jackals wanted the king, the lion, to kill the bull so they can eat. But there was already an agreement, so they had to make an arrangement so that the king, their king, the lion, and the bull would fight with each other the lion would kill the bull and they could eat it. So what they did is they went to the bull and said, "The king is very angry at you, that you better protect yourself. Because there's a famine, he decided to eat you, you better protect yourself. We're your friends, we're just giving you good advice." So then they went to the king and they said, "The bull is very angry. He heard some false things about you and he wants to attack you. So be on guard." So when the king, the lion, met the bull, the lion looked very frightened and fearful. So the bull interpreted it that the king, the jackals were correct, that actually the king, the lion, is going to try to kill me, so I must defend myself. So he put his horns out to defend himself. And the lion says, "Oh, the jackals are completely correct. This bull does want to kill me, so I better defend myself." So the lion jumped on the bull and killed him, and the jackals had a feast. So everyone is working according to their conception, however false it may be. But our conceptions generally prove to be correct because we create the situation by which they, more or less, their self-fulfilled prophecies. You think someone's angry at you, or disturbed at you, or envious of you, and then you reciprocate by becoming envious and angry against them, and then they reciprocate and they manifest envy and anger against you, you're convinced I was 100% correct in my estimation of them. Because one's own mentality manifests in others the very consciousness that one was supposing that others has. Therefore, Bhagavatam, as it says here, Vaishnava Kriya Mudra, that one should try to see things from our own point of view, because we're in illusion. We're thinking ourselves to be this body or this mind, and therefore everything we do is wrong. Anyone who's working in the Bali concept of life, it is said, Pravritim cha navritim cha, jana navido asura, nisocham napichacharo nisatyam teshu vidite. The demoniac, the asuras, of course when we use the word demoniac, everyone becomes very disturbed because it reminds us of our brother or something. But what? That's not why we become disturbed. We become disturbed because we've been conditioned to think, how dare they say demoniac people are bad? Because most people are demoniac and they become insulted, because they like to think the demons are good people. Just like there's a Ramayana, there's different Ramayans, and there's one Ramayana written for people in the mode of ignorance. And in this Ramayana, Ravan is the hero. They claim that just Ravana was just looking the wrong way, and then by some chance, Ram slayed him. So the demons are always thinking like that. Our friend Kamsa was not attentive, and therefore Krishna was able to kill him when he wasn't attentive. So everyone is thinking that they're a good person. Even the demons think they're good people. They think they're doing everyone a favor by being demons. Therefore, one has to understand things from the actual point of view of Krishna consciousness. And it's not like there's some fanatical philosophy called Krishna consciousness, and we're demanding that everyone see things from that point of view, that you have to become a blind follower and accept, surrender, bow down. Bow down, mister. No, it's just reality. I mean, who could actually dispute the fact that we're all eternal? Is there some reasonable argument that says that our body is changing, but we're changing along with the body? And that we entered into the room as Bhaktin so-and-so, and we exit the room as Bhakta so-and-so? who could say that actually we're different at every moment? And who could say that the material world is not going on under some control? Just like they want to define what God is, who God is, they want to make their own definition of God and dispute whether it exists or not. But then again, how did we, any of us, get here? Did any of us create anything around here? Now, if none of us did anything to bring this universe about, how did it come about? So the scientists say, so-called scientists, it came out of nothing. But what have we ever seen? If science is based upon experience, observation, experimentation, observation, and therefore conclusion, their theory is everything came out of nothing. So what is their experiment that they're doing to produce things out of nothing? As a matter of fact, the only nothing is there's nothing experiments. There's no experiment. That's nothing. Or sometimes they say that the only actual void that exists is between the scientist's two ears. So there's no experiment to produce something out of nothing. There's no observation, therefore. And therefore the conclusion that everything came out of nothing is unscientific. It's just a fanatic religion, that's all. Based upon complete sentiment. An intelligent person can see that if there is organization, if there is systematic organization, there must be a person behind the system. If the sun's rising at a certain time and setting at a certain time, there must be an intelligent person who's arranged that. So it's undisputable we're eternal, time is eternal, time is changing everything, nothing is changing time. The material nature is simply transposing itself, and it's all working under intelligence. So it's not some fanatic understanding, it's actually science. Real science is that everyone's body has to change eternally, but the soul within the body never changes. That's science. It's observable. And it's observable eternally. Not for some time, and then it changes. It never changes. So that's real science. All the other experiments that the science is doing are only to find out what they don't know. So what they don't know is unlimited. Therefore, they can go on forever finding out what they don't know. And they'll never know anything. Except maybe one day they'll figure out we don't know anything. And then they'll make some progress. Therefore, being covered by the illusory energy, we don't know, and therefore we accept those basic things, our eternality, the existence of God, the existence of time, how the material nature is working under the modes of material nature, then we can make some progress, hopefully, towards seeing things properly. And as soon as we forget those basic things, then everything we see is wrong, and everything we do is wrong. Everything we do is not good for ourselves, and it's not good for anyone else. However, we may imagine ourselves to be good and saviors, whatever, we're actually, according to the Bhagavatam, according to Bhagavad Gita, we're simply rascals. Mudha. Now the mudhas, the rascals, they don't know anything, but they think they know everything, or they think they're going to find out something by their speculation. And therefore, because they don't see things from the point of view of eternity and how Krishna is controlling things, they can't discriminate between, they have no idea what a devotee is because they don't believe in devotees. They don't believe in Vishnu. How can they believe in a devotee of Vishnu? If they don't believe in actually the personality of Godhead, how could they understand who's a devotee of God? What's the value of it? If I told you I'm a devotee of the Good Fairy, would you take it very seriously? Oh, you're a devotee of the Good Fairy, you know. I must offer you all respect. Maybe he'll accept that. If he believes in the Good Fairy, I don't know. Do you believe in the Good Fairy? Yes. Yes. Well, I'm a devotee of the Good Fairy. There is no value if we don't believe that the person exists. What's the value of being a devotee of a non-existent thing? My object of worship is an unicorn. And every day, I always gather the flowers from the sky. So I won't get any appreciation. I'll be put into a padded cell after some time if I insist on this understanding. So when we say there's Vishnu, we should surrender to Krishna, and Krishna has given his instructions in Bhagavad Gita, and we become important as much as we follow those instructions, people will take it, they won't take it seriously because they don't believe in Vishnu. They don't believe in his words. They don't believe in anything except whatever comes to their imagination, whatever mode of material nature they're situated under, which anyone in the material concept of life is in ignorance for the most part. And the only hope is to get some vision coming from scripture and then try to act according to it. So it doesn't matter who one is, a great yogi like Durvasa Muni, or a rich industrialist, or a fantastic swimmer, or whatever. Everyone is in ignorance. And therefore, whatever they're doing is a waste of time. However, it may be glorified by other people wasting their time. Therefore, Durvasa Muni was intelligent enough, he was fortunate enough, to see the power of the Vaishnav. Not exactly, the power of the Vaishnav is that a Vaishnava or anyone else is not simply a body with a soul in it. There's also the super soul. So when we pick a fight with a Vaishnava, we're also picking a fight with the super soul, which is not a good idea because we're going to lose. Well, as a matter of fact, we're always losing, but we're going to lose in a bigger way, that's all. So Durvasa Muni, who is fortunate enough to not get burned immediately by the Sudarsana Chakra. Sudarsana Chakra could have come and so he burned him to ashes immediately. But because he was a great Brahmin and a yogi, and therefore Krishna wanted to teach him a lesson rather than just burn him to ashes. So therefore he gave him the opportunity to flee around the universe for a year and get burnt by the Sudarsana Chakra. And then ultimately come to Vishnu. He was so powerful he could actually meet Vishnu and get some good instruction by which he surrendered to Durvasa Muni, and therefore Durvasa Muni's Ambarish Maharaj saved him. So as I said before, we're also being burnt by the Sudarsana Chakra. We're being forced into repeated birth and death, and unfortunately we're comfortable with the whole thing. We think it's nice. I'm making progress. People love me because I'm such a good demon. I'm a good demon like all the other ones. But the fact is that unless we surrender to a Vaishnav, unless we follow his instructions, and that doesn't mean, well, here's a devotee, he's not a pure Vaishnav, I don't have to surrender to him. No, we're not surrendering to anyone in particular. We're surrendering to the words of Krishna coming to the disciples' succession. And if we obey them, we can know how to act properly towards others. If we don't, then we'll be simply under the influence of eternal time in the Sudarsana Chakra, and we'll get burnt. No matter how much we think ourselves to be great personalities, that we can decide ourselves through our own vision, that we can offend Vaishnavas, we can offend any living entity. And since, in my estimation, this living entity is just ordinary, therefore I can get away with it. But we're not going to get away with anything. We're going to get burnt by the Sudarsana Chakra in eternal time and suffer the reactions. Therefore, the conclusion is, We should see things from through the eyes of Guru, Sadhana, and Shastra, not with these deficient eyes, and learn how to respect all living entities appropriately. Otherwise, we're simply going to continue following our ignorant ways into the darkest regions of existence. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for a nice lecture. I'm wondering if Dhruvasa Muni ever became devotee after this incident.
I don't know. I mean, he's obviously, he's not an ordinary personality. I mean, if you can go and meet Vishnu in Svetadvip, he must be pretty exalted. And he became a devotee of Ambarish, so therefore he must be a devotee. Because later on we find Dhruvasa Muni, Duryodhana sending him to the forest, to the Pandavas, with his 40,000 followers, and then ready to curse the Pandavas by Duryodhana's arrangement. So obviously people are subject to forgetfulness. Because Krishna came and saved the Pandavas, so. Anything else? Did you have your hand up? Anyone else? Yeah.
Hare Krishna, thank you very much, Maharaj, for this lecture. When you spoke about the real knowledge and the science of spiritual knowledge and that we are souls, we read in scriptures that Krishna is present in every atom and in every cells of our bodies. So I'm wondering, does this, like, every cell has a soul? And when they deteriorate, they leave our existence? Or how does that work? Are we, like, actually...
They go and they take another body as a cell.
Is our soul actually... really linked to the super soul, and that's where consciousness is, as in integrity of all the cells, or how does that...
We're the supreme soul in this body right now, with the head soul, that's all.
Okay.
But there are so many souls in the body, so many bacteria, so many worms and things like that. They're also there are family members. We're all living together in the same house.
Okay.
So we can say brother worm, brother amoeba, whatever, or sister amoeba, I don't know. So we're one big happy family till we're no longer one big happy family. Yeah, it's inconceivable, but then again, we don't know very much. How can this go on? How is anything going on? How do we know? We don't know anything.
Thank you.
But according to the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, there are six symptoms of life. There's birth, there's growing, there's reproduction, there's dwindling, and then there's annihilation. So if some cell goes through those six symptoms. It appears, it grows, it maintains for some time, it reproduces, it dwindles, and then it's annihilated, then it must have a soul in it, with a super soul. According to the scientists, every cell, its arrangements in terms of producing energy, storing energy, transportation of energy, removal of waste products, reproduction. Every cell is more complicated than an entire city like New York City. The arrangements, each cell. So how is that possible unless there was some intelligence behind it?
So I heard I read in some article that we change all of our body cells every 7 years. So we're all only 7 years old. I mean, our bodies are, how...
No, we're eternal.
I know we're internal, but our bodies are only 7 years old, actually.
7 years old.
I mean,
if, 7 years old.
If the cells...
We're old, but we're only 7 years old.
If the cells actually change every 7 years, is the
They're changing every moment. What is big of 7 years? Every moment, everything's changing.
Like they all live and, you know...
But they're not changing the way we want them to change, necessarily.
Okay.
It's not that the cells may be different every year. It's not that we get younger cells. They get a little, probably weaker after some time. They don't change as, you know, as strongly. So obviously, when you get older, you don't have exactly the same energy you had before. There must be some difference. If you were just seven years old all the time, you'd have a lot more energy than we have now.
Yes. So, what determines this capacity to renew the
Krishna?
Krishna.
Our karma.
Okay.
I mean, look at the air we're breathing, look at the water we're drinking, the food that we're eating. Our consciousness, all the different vibrations going on, our chemtrails. You know, we're feeding the cells garbage and we're expecting them to be healthier. Hey, more garbage, I'm getting stronger. No, you feed garbage, that's what you get. That's what the cells can work with. And they become weaker and weaker in the course of time. Even what to speak of nowadays, the mother is a weak, the father is a weak, and their children are weaker than they were before. Therefore, by the end of Kali Yuga, you're born, and if you're 1 meter high, you're considered a champion basketball player. You're the tallest person in the world. And if you can live to 20 years old, you're considered a ripe old man or a woman. Because there is a difference between pure air, pure water, pure food, pure consciousness, and Kali Yuga air, Kali Yuga food, Kali Yuga water, Kali Yuga consciousness. And therefore things are degraded. Anything else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I was just wondering, we have so many... bacteria in our body, so if we chant and eat prasadam, do they benefit as well, or?
Yeah, sure, they get some prasad too. So we should be generous and eat a lot of prasadam for them. We can't save everyone else, we can at least save the cells in our body, and also the bacteria and the worms and everything else, by eating prasadam. Anyone else? There's some question.
This is online question from Bhakti Yoga Tilburg. Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the class. I have a question. How does the verse that you mentioned, that it is last only, Bhagavad Gita 3.37, connects to the verse Bhagavad Gita 2.62. It seems that the contemplating the objects of the senses is the root of the problem, since after that follows attachment and lust. Or is it maybe possible to transform the attachment and not let it become lust? Sorry for the long question.
Yes, that's Krishna consciousness. That instead of contemplating the objects of the senses, we contemplate Krishna. We see things in relation to Krishna, and we contemplate how to serve Krishna with these objects, rather than serve our senses. And then lust gets transformed into love by adding Krishna to it. So there's one Gurukul student, sent Prabhupada a letter, and he said, I've been learning math in Gurukul, that 1 + 1 = 2, and 3 + 2 = 5. So Prabhupada wrote back, he said, that's very good you're learning math, but you should learn this math, that Krishna plus anywhere is equal to Vrindavan. So you should always remember that math equation. If you remember that, then you'll always be in Vrindavan. Khala Granthiraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.